The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 477, to be broadcast on Wednesday, April 1st, 2026, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Happy April Fool's Day. Anyway, welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, you can feel free to comment down here below, but I will be the only one who can answer, so you may or may not get a response from me. If you would like to reach out and contact me, you can just send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. Or if you're watching on Facebook Live, you can leave comments below. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, and you are listening right now, you can just make your comment down here below, or you can drop me an email. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week. Interesting how the rant of the week just keeps carrying over. So, are we paying attention yet? The current average national gas price as of the official AAA, whatever it is across the country, is $4.01 per gallon. Yeah, 4.02 actually, 4.018. Or for diesel, $4.54 a gallon. So a week ago, it was $3.99 a gallon, and now it's up to over $4 a gallon, and here we go. It hasn't been here since 2022, when another war broke out in the world, which was the war of Russia and Ukraine war, which is still going on. We start to catch on here yet? Maybe a bicycle is not a bad idea. You know, this is Bicycle Talk, so we do talk about bicycles here. It breaks down to roughly 12.5 gallons per driver per week. That's roughly what we spend here in the United States on gas. We don't go by what we spend in dollars yet because I'm going to get there. That's roughly $50 a week or a little over $200 a month. It's going to work out to around $2,500 a week. Is it time to consider cycling yet? A 50% reduction in your gas consumption would save you $1,200, enough to justify investing in your bicycle. Not a bad idea, right? Not to mention you're going to invest in your health, in your healthcare, and all the other wonderful things that go along with cycling. And if you're consuming diesel, it's going to be even more. An average diesel-powered passenger vehicle, they call passenger vehicle like a pickup truck or SUV in the U.S., likely consumes 10 to 15 gallons of diesel per week, assuming an average of 17,000 annual miles and fuel efficiency range somewhere between 20 and 30 miles per gallon. Find me a diesel that gets that kind of mileage. They're not out there anymore. VW got sued for lying about it and making them. Long story. So light-duty diesel vehicles, the best I've seen, and I've had people boasting about their big F-150 pickup trucks that get up to 24 miles to the gallon. They don't get 30 miles to the gallon. They just don't. Anyway, beside the point. My point being that it's costing you a lot of money to drive that oversized behemoth vehicle, and maybe it's time to start supplementing a little bit of your travel by using your bicycle instead, because you're going to save money, you're going to save a lot of things. You're going to save your sanity, you're going to save your health, you're going to save so much by going this way. All right, I'll stop ranting on that. I rant on it every week. I'll be back next week to rant some more about it, I'm sure, because the way things are going, I'm sure the price of gas will continue going up. On a positive side, wow, the spring weather has finally hit. I just checked my thermometer here at the house, and we are raging right around 68 degrees, 69 degrees Fahrenheit. That's pretty warm. That's pretty nice for the end of March. Pretty excited by this. So that's a cool thing. And of course, I have to say that if you're listening to this on WHUS right now, on April 1st, it's April Fool's Day. So of course I had to go down that road. I had to go down the road, and we will get to that in a little bit. Wait for it. April Fool's pranks and ideas are coming at you a little bit later in the show. Not very much later, but a little later. And I've been talking about the Taipei show and what's going on. We looked at what the expectations were that were going and that were happening there. I have a list here. I have 3 pages of information here, of information from the Taipei show. So those of you who are really psyched about gear and interesting trends in the bicycle industry and what you might see at your local bike shop in the near future, stay tuned, because I've got some information here for you. Some of the stuff you will be amazed when you see. Like, for instance, I'll give you a teaser, a solar-powered scooter. Think futuristic Vespa. Remember Vespas, the little gasoline ones? They still make those, by the way. Those little kind of moped-ish kind of scooter things. They do still make those things. But this one is completely solar-powered. Solar and battery powered, obviously. So we will get to more of that when we get into the show. But in the meantime, and I'll have some conclusion about the Taipei show too. So also remember, bicycle. Now we're into mechanical minute and bicycle tips. Remember, it's April Fool's Day. Please don't take this seriously, but I am going to go down a list of things that we can put into our mechanical minute and bike tips. For all of the many shops that have to pump up tires for free, you can announce that you are now going to have to start charging for the service because, wait for it, inflation. New arrival of Aero bicycle bells save 0.7 watts on the average riding speed of 43 kilometers per hour, available for only $300 in aluminum and $700 in carbon. A gravel-specific aero bell in a tie carbon mixture will be available as soon as they come off of back order. Yeah, remember, it's April Fool's, folks. I'll keep reminding you. Tired of those squealing disc brakes? We have instructions on greasing brake discs. Don't do that, please. Free training wheels with the purchase of clipless pedals and shoes. Bicycle air conditioning, just a window unit attached to a front rack that runs off of a generator so you can stay cool while you're riding. Oh boy, these are bad. For the ultimate safety, introducing the bike inflatable bubble wrap suit. Wireless brakes. Try to wrap your head around that one. That one took me a little while. But yeah, wireless brakes. Yeah, probably not happening. Recumbent conversion kits. All you need is a hacksaw, an extra wheel, and a used car bucket seat. Don't do that. Anyway, telling your friends that e-bikes were officially allowed in this year's Tour de France. Call your most competitive cycling buddy, I like this one, and tell him that the local newspaper is interested in writing a feature about their cycling career. April Fools. Touching the air valve on your friend's front wheel while hissing loudly to imitate the sound of leaking air. Your friend won't be happy and think you're letting the air out of their tube. And last but not least, and this is not fun because I've had it happen only because I accidentally learned very, very early in my cycling world that you cannot do this. Pour some sort of a soda, let's say like a Coke or a Pepsi or a Mountain Dew, or not to mention brand names. But anyway, in his or her water bottle and then seal it up and wait for the smaller version of a Yellowstone Park geyser at the slightest shake. It happens pretty quickly. Anyway, a couple bumps down the road and whoof, off it goes. So those are my April Fool's cycling tips, which I will ask you to please not do, because they're probably not, you're not going to keep a lot of friends that way. Let's move on into the show. And I'm going to start out with content from the bicycle business. Okay, the Taipei show is now complete, and I have a list of things that you can expect from the Taipei show, and maybe to see in the future with your local bike shop. I'm going to start with the teaser that I put out. It wasn't an April Fool's joke, just so you know. There is going to be, or there is in development, a solar-powered scooter. It looks like a giant solar panel. Basically, it kind of rounds out, and you straddle over the top of this thing. And this is real, okay? It is, so the challenge has always been the size of the solar panels that you need to replenish a depleted battery, and it has to be very large and still not, and we really couldn't make them fast enough for meaningful results. Well, this company called Lightfoot seems to have cracked a code by cladding its entire scooter in panels. It's not fully, wholly solar powered, okay, as the Lightfoot scooter still uses wall power to fully charge. However, its 120-watt solar panel add around 3 miles of range for every hour of peak sunlight, with the potential of 18 to 28 miles of additional range per day. It has a top speed of 20 miles per hour and a range of roughly 37 miles on a standard charge, and has a lockable storage compartment up front behind the panels. Cost would be a lot. I'll leave it at that. And it will be available soon, they say, in the U.S. We'll see if it happens or not. But anyway, that was one of the things that was at the Taipei show this year. So there's many more, of course. And that's day two. We don't want to go here. That's day three. So the big one, I would say, is 32-inch wheels. The 32-inch wheels, larger diameter wheels, it looks like they're targeting this towards mountain bicycle and also towards gravel bicycles, and they are not targeting them at all towards anyone who is in any way vertically challenged. So obviously, you just can't make anything with that big of a wheel that is going to be able to house someone who is short, because they're going to have a difficult time standing over the 32-inch wheel to begin with could be a challenge. Think about your inseam and think about what you can stand over. So, yes, these are going to be larger than normal. What is the idea behind this? The idea behind this is, as we have learned from the world of mountain bikes and the world of cyclocross bikes, the larger diameter wheel rolls over things better. And it also gives you a little bit more of a cushion. In which way does it give you a cushion? It gives you a cushion in the fact that not only can you roll over bigger things without hitting the bumps as hard, okay, because you're gonna leverage is the name of the game here, all right, but you're also going to have much longer spokes. And the longer spokes that are being developed for these, a lot of them are being made out of carbon fiber now. So those spokes, with the amount of flexibility they have with the carbon and the length of them, are making these wheels incredibly comfortable. I want to ride one. I don't want to own one because I have a lot of bicycles. And it's really not that intriguing to me to want to lug around a 32-inch wheel with me, because there has to be a weight change there. There's got to be a weight increase because of the size of the wheel. Now, of course, to go along with those wheels in development is 32-inch tires. So consider now, if you're an old-timer like me and you're listening to this show, the largest tire we ever had out there back in the day was a 27-inch wheel. And maybe if you owned one of those old Raleigh police bicycles, you might have had a 28-inch wheel, but that was it. Now, I will say that those old police bicycles, those really with the full metal, no cable, cantilevered brakes, they were really comfy to ride on. They took a lot of work to propel them down the road, but they were very comfortable to ride on. But just a little bit of an increase there, just a 1-inch increase in the diameter of the wheel makes a huge, huge difference. The mountain bike people, after numerous cyclocross people like myself, trying to show them that we could ride our bikes anywhere that they could ride their bikes, and I had those arguments constantly when mountain bikes first came out. They learned a long ways down the road as mountain bikes started to develop that maybe we should try to put a bigger wheel on. So what they ended up doing is they put on a wheel that was a 700C rim, which is a common size for a road bicycle or for a cyclocross bicycle. And what they did there, and they made and developed a tire that would go onto that would be very aggressive off-road and then wide enough to do what they needed to do, and it became a 29-inch wheel. So you go all the way from 26-inch wheel up to 29-inch wheel, and the game changes. The bicycle has the ability to ride over a 4-inch, let's say, object that's on the trail that would be either a stone or a root or whatever it may be, maybe a little bit of a ditch or something you're bopping through. But that 28-inch wheel doesn't get bogged down as quickly, and it tends to keep you from going over the handlebars as much. Add to that a good suspension fork, and off you go. In the Taipei show, by the way, yes, they are now developing suspension forks for the 32-inch wheel. So what's next? We have no idea. But this is a big trend, and it seemed to be everywhere. And so there were a lot of people talking about it. One of the more interesting things I saw was a dual motor powered military e-bike. Yeah, for real. With a holder for your AK-47 and holders and bags and everything all over it, designed for military use. Dual motors, so one in the front hub, one in the rear hub, and maximum battery capacity, obviously. And yeah, they're developing now military assault bicycles. You just never know what you're going to see next. Another piece that came out that I thought was interesting, because I'm having this neck thing right now, so I have to upright more on my bicycle than I used to since they built the small bridge behind my back, behind my neck. I noted that they are now making riser bars, and I think I saw a set of these on Tadej Pogačar's bike in one of the events that he recently did. I think he is actually riding on these. The rise is actually off of the handlebar itself. It's a carbon molded bar, so it is all kind of one piece, which has some restrictions. But the bar, when it comes off of the stem, then curves up and rises up about, oh, maybe an inch or two. I would say 20 millimeters is what that's what they said. It was like an inch or two. Anyway, not a lot, but it's there. And yeah, 20 millimeters is what my notes say here. So, gives the rider a little bit more of an upright comfort, but still allows them to have a a bike that has a drop bar on it. So it looks interesting. It looks real interesting. In amongst the handlebar issues that are out there, there's a newly developed, I think it's actually on my next page here, but that's okay. There is a bar that is also coming through really narrow, really, really narrow. Not UCI approved for those of you who are trying to stay within the limits of the UCI and you're racing your bicycle. And the women just lost a really, really big fight on this one recently. And the UCI has decided they do not want you to be using anything smaller than a 38 centimeter bar right now. So the 36s, which have become very popular in the women's field due to smaller size people, smaller frame people, narrower shoulders, they are no in the bicycle racing world. Why are they no? That's a good question, because the UCI makes up silly ideas about what they do and do not want to see, like 6-inch socks. Not going there, but I did mention it. And that's a shout out to Billy, who loves my 6-inch sock thing. Anyway, I will say that these bars are really interesting, because not only were they narrower, but they curved in, and they had really, really interesting, really interesting curvature on them, which would bring your shoulders down forward a little bit more. Well, why does the UCI not like them? Because they give you more of an aerodynamic advantage. Look, until the human body becomes not what we see right here, right now, there's not a lot more aerodynamic advantage. Although, there is a little bit if you can position yourself correctly on your bike. And that is something that I've told people for years. If you want to get faster, you have to change your position on your bike. You really got to focus on your position. That's a great way to get faster on your bike. And it doesn't cost you a lot of money. It just costs you a little bit of training and getting used to it. So anyway, that is what it is. Okay, what else did they have here? Folding bikes. Lots and lots and lots of folding commuter bikes. Tons of them. It seemed like everywhere you went, you'd go around a corner and you'd see. I got this all from videos that people took when they went to the Taipei show, by the way. Shout out to any of my friends that still go to the Taipei show. I think we're all kind of aging out on that one, but I wonder if my friend Mr. Fairchild is still going to those Taipei shows. He's one of my bike designer friends from way back when, in the early days. But lots of folding bikes. Interesting folding bike. This folding bike, you are riding it down the road to your local coffee shop, and you park the folding bike, you fold it up, and it becomes a small table which holds your laptop computer. What'll they think of next? Yep, there it is. It's actually kind of cool. It actually kind of has a cool factor to it. So these are the things you see when you go to the Taipei show. There is becoming some backlash on tubeless road tires. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Sorry, I'm not really jumping on that one too hard. But those people who have adapted and changed over to wider tires, like going to 32 and above width tires, 32 millimeters and above, they're still riding on, the tubeless tires. The gravel people have not adapted really well to the tubeless thing. They don't like them as much. I don't know why. I don't understand it. I have talked to a number of gravel people who use them all the time. And I have talked to cyclocross people that use them. But the cyclocross people, again, they're hit or miss as far as whether they like them or not. Because if you don't get that pressure exactly right on them and you're in a really bumpy situation, you can burp the tire flat and then you have no tire. So that doesn't really work. So anyway, tubeless, that's been kind of, it was a talk around at the Taipei show about, you know, is this a good idea? Is this not a good idea? Should we continue to develop this or not? The jury is out. Mountain bikes say absolutely. Gravel bikes say not so sure. Cyclocross people say not so sure, but they go either way. Road bike people adapted to it very quickly. But as they're now going to the, you know, there's all sorts of changes in tires and all, there's a big trend for people to go back to the super lightweight tubes. Who would have guessed? You know, I've been I've been on this one for a while. I'm not a big tubeless guy. So anyway, that was that 30-liter ultrasonic chain waxers. Get this. So you see these big teams that are racing bicycles. You know, they're obviously well-funded. They obviously have a huge mechanical staff. These guys are working all night long, fixing bikes, getting them ready for the next day, preparing them, cleaning them down, making them look beautiful and pretty again the next day. They're also cleaning the chains. Sometimes a lot of chains all at once. And so there's like a three-phase system here. It's the chain stripper bowl that they put the chains in. And then there is the water rinse that they go through, and after that they go into a wax that is applied. Now this was kind of interesting because this company was claiming that they had a you get about 2 days out of a well-waxed chain. All right, 2 days is not what I would expect, because my experience with a wax chain is I'm happy if I could get 2 hours out of a wax chain before all of a sudden I started to hear all sorts of creaking and funny noises and just a lot of chatter from the chain. So I'm not a big chain waxer. I have found some other things that are working extremely well, and they may have some sort of a waxish base in them, but I'm not a big believer in wax. But just so you know, these guys can do 12 chains at a time with this system. And when you're doing as many chains as they are, up to 120, yeah, for real, 120. This is a great system that works really well for them. But can you imagine that, having to clean and prepare 120 chains? Now, they're not using all 120 chains at the same time. They're rotating them every 2 days. You're getting a new chain, new chain, new chain. If you're one of the GC riders, you're probably getting a brand new one every single day. You're probably getting a completely cleaned and waxed up and ready to go chain every single day. It's still waxing. Waxing still has some limitations. I'm not real big on it, but maybe I should give it a try again. It is very clean, and it looks real pretty on your bike. But anyway, to take the risk or not to take the risk, that is the question. I tend to be an old school guy. If you guys know me, you've listened to me for a long time, you know that that's kind of my way. I'm a big believer in, as much as I hate the idea of what we're doing to our environment, I like petroleum products on my chain because it seems to work really, really good. Works good in a car engine, works good on a chain. And in various ways, too. You can get a hybrid mix, you can do all sorts of things. But anyway. So what else here? CVO Kuvo is... there's a company called Kuvo, it's C-U-V-O, and they are making 3D printed chamois. Yes, chamois. You know, that nice little thing that goes inside your shorts that makes life a lot more bearable on a bicycle seat? Well, there's a company who is producing these in a 3D design, and they are also 3D printing these with an inner section. Instead of being foam, it is more breathable type of and moisture removal type of system that they're applying to the 3D print. Who would have guessed? But yeah, 3D printing is alive and well, and it's soon to touch a very special part of your body. Isn't that nice? All right, that's my first page. My second page here, as we're going through the Taipei show, if you just dialed into us here, there's a new bottom bracket out. No more bottom brackets. We don't need any more selection of bottom brackets. Yes, we do. Apparently we do. So there is a new twist fit bottom bracket that goes in very quickly and effortlessly into the bottom bracket of your bicycle. Don't ask me why they keep developing these things, but they do. And then there become new standards, and then there becomes, it's opening a giant can of worms, in my opinion. But anyway, it's supposed to be 30 grams lighter. Yeah, for you weight weenies out there, and I know you're out there because I know a lot of you well, but for you weight weenies that are out there, it's good, 30 grams lighter. Good for you. Good for you. A lot of car company licensed e-bikes. Does that sound interesting to you? Would you buy a Ford e-bike? One that says... Maybe it's a Bronco, a Ford Bronco e-bike. Would you buy a Volkswagen e-bike? Would you buy a Porsche e-bike? Guess what? It's starting to happen. And why is this starting to happen? I think we know that there are car companies out there that are starting to see the writing on the wall, and they feel they have enough brand name recognition that they could possibly get in on this game before it starts hurting their bottom line. So they're making very high quality e-bikes with car company logos on them and licensing with them. And that was something that was very apparent at this year's Taipei show. Interesting how that works. Road bike clipless pedals with a flat side on the other side. They've been developing these things for years. We've had them mainly with mountain bike style, like SPD clipless on one side and then a flat on the other side. These were made with a little bit more of a flat platform, a nice flat platform, if you're going to have a platform pedal, and then maybe a look style type of clip-in on the other side, more road-oriented clip-in. So those are new, and those are something that we'll probably see at your local bike shop soon, or you can ask about them, and they'll research it and find them for you. That was another thing. Chinese group sets coming soon. You knew it was going to happen, right? We knew that Shimano and SRAM is already there. They've been pulling their group sets out of China for a long time. But you knew it was eventually going to happen. And it looks like we might be seeing an actual Chinese-based group set. I think that there was a licensing that was purchased from SunTour. I'm not 100% sure on that one. You will have to, you can fact check me on that one and see, but I believe SunTour is now owned by a Chinese company, and that is probably what we're going to see hit the market next. And if we're getting in complete group sets from China, this is going to add a lot of competition to the world. Shimano's still number one. SRAM is way up there. Campagnolo is still up there. There's still other group sets that are available. But when the Chinese get involved in things, as we know, they can make things much, much more competitive. So we'll see what happens. Would you ride a Chinese group set on your new bicycle? Maybe. All right. So what else do we have here? Zero drag silent free hubs. Okay. You know how you got the... Some people are like big on their noisy rear wheel cassettes. I don't get it. I think they are obnoxious as all get out. This is something I would buy. This is something that I would look into. I coast, my bike makes no noise. Right? Your bike is not supposed to make noise. That's the whole point. The most noise you should hear when you're out riding your bike is you breathing. Enough said. Opinion, yes. Strong, probably. Disputable, probably. But I don't like my bike making any noise. I just don't. I don't like it when the person who's riding next to me has a bike that makes noise. It drives me nuts. I like quiet. Really, really nice. So there is a zero drag silent free hub. Zero drag, that means that when you spin the wheel, it just keeps spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning. And the paws that are inside of the free hub do not slow it down. I have yet to see it. I saw it on video. That's all I can tell you. Never know if that's right or not. And there is a new trainer out there, one that you would hook your bike up to for the winter to train inside and do your Zwift or your Ruvi or your whatever it is that you're using. And it has a 2700 watt resistant level. Who can put out 2700 watts? Why do you need that? Anyway, I said it. I saw it. I said it. It's over. Day three. Okay. Day three. 3D printed aerodynamic titanium frame set. Mind blowing, right? A lot of money. A whole lot of money. Like a lot of money. But soon to be available in the United States where people have a lot of money, I guess. I don't know. Looked really expensive to me. At the same price that you could get a custom built, gorgeous, made in the USA, right up in Boston, Massachusetts area, no names to be said, you can get one of these at the same price. Do you want that? I don't know. Seems silly to me, but anyway. The other comments that were made on day three, concluding everything, is that the industry recovery is still going slowly from the last incident that we had, which was the COVID spike, COVID crash. And so that means that there's less innovation due to the fact that there's an oversupply because COVID hit, supply went to nothing. Then supply got overabundant because everybody like grabbed everything they could to bring it back in so it never happened again. And now there's an oversupply of equipment out there because of lack of people riding conventional bicycles. I'm not going to say lack of people riding bicycles, conventional bicycles. Moving on. Biodegradable endurance hot wax. Okay, here we go. Saves 6 to 12 watts of power. That's pretty impressive. And lasts 800 to 1,000 kilometers. Yet to be seen, but wow. Okay, this may get Pedalin Ron to put wax on his chain. Maybe. If you can go that far without having to maintain chain, that's a pretty good deal. That works to me. But anyway, we'll see. And of course, magnetic water bottles and water bottle cages. Why? That's scary to me. That has to be one heck of a magnet because I've had my bottles eject out of a perfectly good, solid, hard to get your bottle out bottle cage. So yet to be seen. That's the Taipei show. That's what I got right now. And we will move on to more later into the show. Where are we going here? Okay, let's go here because this is kind of interesting. I'm going to zip over to bicycle racing here real quick, and we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on out there. We know the names. We've heard them before. Wout van Aert is one of them. He is resurgent right now is what he's calling it. And there's still some classic races like Flanders Fields and E3 Saxo Classic that were going on. Van Aert is looking pretty pretty good right now. So we don't know what's going to happen because, you know, we got the big one coming up. The Tour de Flanders is the next really big race. That will be next weekend, by the way, if you are a bike racing fan. Certainly a lot of fun to watch. Almost always available on YouTube live, which is kind of cool. And so you can watch that. But in the Flanders Field race, it was a reminder that the Visma Lisa bike rider can still come up with the goods. While he was nowhere near the podium in the final reckoning, his two-up breakaway sprint with Matthew Vanderpoel, Rider was once considered his classic's nemesis and has since left him behind, but he proved that he's still a contender. So the best evidence was that Vanderpoel was doing his utmost to drop Van Aert in the Klemmelberg and failing. And at the end, it was all in vain, but unlike the Dutch rider, Van Aert will be confident going into the Tour of Flanders and the Paris-Roubaix. Those are the two big ones coming up. Meanwhile, Larina Wiebes will probably be the woman to watch as far in the women's field goes. Two riders that are still there. And is Matthew Vanderpoel still untouchable? Well, we just don't really know that with what Tadej Pogačar has been doing lately, do we? Hard to say. Meanwhile, what are we missing here? What name seems to be missing? So we're going to go over here and we're going to take a look at, where is he? Where is he? Where is he? Oh, gosh. Jonas Vingegaard. He is riding also in classics that basically are not classics that Tadej is riding in. They haven't really raced together yet. I think that's by design. I think it's to keep everybody guessing and thinking. But his comment is, I've spent the last 2 years fighting my way back. And are we now seeing a Jonas Vingegaard who can take on Tadej Pogačar? Good question. Former Danish pro and pundit says he's found his pre-crash form and could be even better than that. So let's see what happens, because Vingegaard is still alive and kicking, and he spent 2 years fighting to regain his pre-crash form. And the Danish former pro and cycling pundit, somebody else was speaking with Vingegaard, and an impressive ride to GC victory in the Spanish stage last week. So he is doing a little bit different form of competition. I think he is spending a little bit more time on the multi-day races than he is the one-day classics. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens here. But Jonas is riding really well right now. And I think that it would be great to see him back in form again. And, you know, put a little bit of competition into Tadej Pogačar, who seems to be cleaning up on everything. Meanwhile, if they all show up for Flanders or for the Paris-Roubaix, I don't think they'll all show up for Roubaix, but pretty sure that, and Matthew Vanderpoel is there and Wout van Aert is there, we could have some really exciting bike racing coming up. So that's it. I'm not going to touch any more on bike racing right now because I have one more thing that I really wanted to go after here. And let's make sure I clear my screen here and see where it is. So I actually wrote these down because it came off of a video and I wanted to go over we're going into the bicycle advocacy phase of the show right now, and we're going to talk about, and let's see if you have made any of these mistakes, the 5 mistakes made by bicycle advocates. All of us, in a way, if we're out riding our bicycles on the road or commuting or doing whatever we are doing, we all are advocates for cycling. If we are in love with cycling to the point where we even sit down and listen to or keep it in the background a crazy episode of Bicycle Talk, we're probably a bicycle advocate. We're probably in enthused enough by cycling to therefore continue to try to learn as much as we can about cycling. I'm trying to learn every day. More and more I find about what I thought I knew, I'm not even close. I'm still learning every day. So five mistakes that are made by bicycle advocates. Number one is possibly my favorite one of all. You versus the world. Yeah. I'm going to teach everyone out there why they should be riding a bicycle. Well, I kind of am that guy. I preach a lot. I attend meetings. I make presentations. I am working with groups that are putting on bike rides. I am involved in my bicycle world. But I also have that tendency to go into the you versus the world. So here's the suggestion. Don't do all the work on your own, okay? You need to bring others into your fight. You need to find other groups that are willing to join you. And you need to just start touching base outside of your window of sight, which makes you less tunnel visioned and a little more open to introducing the idea to the world that maybe you can help change just a little bit. Okay, only build coalitions with bike people. That's the number two big mistake. Yeah, you preach it to the choir, guys. That's it. Guys and gals, both. We're preaching to the choir. If you're just bringing in cyclists to this, then you're missing the point. And this is something that I am very guilty of and very aware of. We have a big ride coming up called the Ride of Silence, and it is in May. And who do I reach out to? I reach out to all the bicycle people, of course, because, you know, we're the ones that are out there that have had the issues with cars and trucks. And maybe we've been hit, and maybe we have a friend who's been hit. Maybe we've lost a loved one who's been hit. You know, that's a thing that, you know, but it's still within that small group. It's time to reach out, time to reach further, go to build coalitions in with, you know, businesses, explain to them how they can benefit from more people on their bikes, go to schools and churches and youth groups, different people that are outside of your vision, okay, and try to bring them in. That's how you build coalitions with others rather than bike people. Number three, thinking too short term. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to get a bike lane in here and I'm going to get it done right now because it needs to be right now. Well, you know, it just doesn't work that way. It takes time. And you got to think about your end game here. And your end game may be that you don't get that bike lane in your lifetime. But you may also be able to get the wheels started and rolling, get other people interested and bring them in, and they can help you with this. But you can't think on a short term that, you know, this is terrible, it needs to get fixed right now. It just doesn't work that way. Number four, separating culture war from infrastructure. Okay, start by getting people on bicycles. All right, so when you try to just change everyone's mind about why you should ride a bike and what are you doing, why are you driving around in that vehicle all the time, why aren't you out on your bicycle, and you just and you're doing an us and them, you've got a culture war thing going on, it's just not the way it works. You got to really start by putting more bikes on the road. More butts on bikes. We used to say that in the bicycle industry all the time. How do you build the bike industry? More butts on bikes. Not the same butts on bikes, more butts on bikes. Bring in people through organized rides that would bring someone in that would possibly not even ride their bike one other time in the year other than that particular event, whatever it may be, you've got to open your doors and windows and let them in. Let them in to what, why you're so passionate about what you do. So politically organize your bike events, okay? You just gotta figure out a way to get more people involved. You gotta start inviting more people into our world. Okay, no political consequences. That's number five. Politicians will say no. And you could go to them and say, you know what, we need to do this and this and this and this. And you could be that same person every single time that goes, you know, we need to do this and this and this and this. And the politicians will go, okay, well, we'll take a look at that. We'll see what we can do. And then they'll eventually go, no, we're not going to do that. Why aren't you going to do it? Well, we have budget issues. We have this. We have that. We're not going to do it. No political consequences. So the mayor keeps on being the mayor, the governor keeps on being the governor, the senator keeps on being the senator, and has no political consequences over it because you're approaching them the same squeaky wheel every single time, saying the same squeaky wheel thing all the time, and they go, well, you know what, we'll let this guy make his noise and do his thing, and you know, and then we'll just kind of, you know, let it run its due time, and then it'll go away, and it'll probably come back a few years later and do something else, but you know, he's just gonna go away. Stop. Wrong direction. Give, you really have to approach all of the people that, let's say you got a petition signed. Maybe you got a petition signed and it was the principal at the local high school. Oh, he signed me a petition. That's interesting. Maybe you got somebody to sign the petition and it was a local business owner who's also the current chairman or whatever at the Chamber of Commerce in town. Oh, he signed my petition. And maybe it's, you know, you gotta look around and see who is on that petition. You gotta go back to them and say, did you know that the mayor said no? Do you know why the mayor said no? How do you feel about that? Do you think the mayor should still be mayor if they think this closed-minded? This is how you take care of the political problem. You have a political consequence. You create your own, and you go out there and you fight the fight, not directly with the person you're having the problem or the administration or the organization you have the problem with. You go out there and fight with a big army behind you of people that go, you know what? You need to listen to what we really want. We signed that petition because we feel that we will bring more business into our town. And you rejected it. And so we are taxpayers in this town, and we are business owners in this town, and we would like you to rethink that decision that was made because we think this is a good idea. So do you see the angle here? No political consequences? If they have no political consequences, they're not going to change anything. But if there are political consequences and they risk the ability to stay in the quote-unquote powerful position they're in, then they're going to rethink everything. So that's it. That's where I'm going to go with this. And I think this is going to probably get us, well, we're still got a few more minutes here to talk about it. But I find that it is very important that we all get out there and we talk a lot in our communities. It is very important that we get out there and we participate more in our communities. You can be the beginning of the change that happens. You may not be the change that happens, but you can be the beginning of the change that happens. And if you spend enough time at it and you get enough people interested, then, you know, things may eventually go your way. It may work in the way that you always envisioned it to be. So it's definitely not an unforeseeable problem that you'll never be able to foresee happening or being solved. There is something about the squeaky wheel. And did I tell you I don't like anything that makes noise when I ride my bike? Yeah. Anyway, squeaky wheels are another thing. Squeaky chains, squeaky wheels, ugh, terrible. But anyway, what do I do when I get a squeaky wheel? I resolve the problem and I lubricate, or I talk to my friend about what kind of lubrication are you using on your chain, because what you're doing isn't working. And so hopefully you can let people know that, you know, there are solutions. And I will also, before I conclude the show, I will say that if you're ever going into a situation where there is a problem which exists and you feel that this problem should be addressed, never, I repeat, never. And I learned this one a long time ago, and I'm glad I learned it when I was young, because it's helped me a lot as I've gone through life. And that is, never approach a problem without at least one or more solutions. If you go there, address the problem, and then create or present a solution that's viable, you'll get a lot more respect. So that's it. I will get off of that high horse right now. I have to shout it out because it's just so incredibly crazy what's going on here right now. But hey, go Huskies, man. Go Huskies. Final Four, men's and women's, both. And if you missed the shot, I don't know what planet you're on, because it's everywhere. The shot. The shot. Yeah. The UConn men took down the number one team in the country with the most amazing shot I have seen since I've been watching college basketball. Yeah, better than Leitner's shot years ago, if you're a basketball fan. That's it. I got to stop with events here. Remember, coming up, we got the Naturalhog Epic, by the way, had 600 riders show up to the gravel ride in March in, you know, possible questionable conditions, but 600 people, big deal. That's a really big deal. So coming up, the Frozen Four is still going on. Two down, two to go. The Easter week is off. So this is a training race, by the way, if you're into learning more about bicycle racing. There is still April 11th and April 18th to finish. The 2026 Giro d'Italia takes place between Friday, May 8th to Sunday, May 31st. The Tour de France will be July 4th to July 26th. The Ride of Silence will be on May 20th at 7 p.m. right here in Storrs, Connecticut. We will have one right here. We're already working with the UConn Police Department on and helping us with that sort of thing. And that's what I got. Give us finishing points. Give us your opinion. Are you ready to park that car yet? How much does the price of gas have to go to be able to get you to ride your bike? If you're listening to this on WHUS, you still have time for an April 1st prank. Remember? Lots of cool new stuff coming out of the Taipei show, and still more classics to come, including the two big ones, Flanders and the Paris-Roubaix. Very exciting. Remember, bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. Cycling is an easier and safer option for more people, because when more people ride bikes, people are happier, healthier, and our community is safer, friendlier, and our planet is greener. Together, we can all work to help get more people to ride bikes. I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. Stop complaining. No, let's stop it. Back that up. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, and the price of gas, and lack of places to safely ride, and do your part. Take the Pedal and Run Challenge. Consider parking your car for just one day and just ride your bike instead. Do all your errands, go to work, go back, whatever. You know, You will surprise yourself. And remember, whether you're riding your bike or you're driving your car, please be safe and kind. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly host, lovely Dr. Fran Storch. Franny's at work. If you're watching Facebook Live, please feel free to comment, or you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you'd like to contribute information, drop me an email. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and whus.org. Thanks for listening. Get on your bikes and ride!